by Q2 of 2026, we are going to have a lot of foreclosures out there.
Yeah, and to all my viewers and listeners, Melody, the last time I had you on, you said this was hitting right now. That was about a month ago, and I want to say you said in November, and boy, did it start to hit.
And you know, these layoffs are just accelerating, you know. I just heard Verizon was 20,000 instead of 15,000. I mean, this is just getting crazy in terms of your white collar. It's a wrecking ball, right? And so, and they are the prime loan borrowers. But here's the thing. I just told you about those payment deferrals. So they're not in this equity position everybody thinks, but also their credit scores were inflated because, you know, student loans weren't reporting. You couldn't get an eviction. You know, you had that mortgage forbearance. And so those borrowers are not as healthy as everybody thinks. And so I shared something on X Twitter this week, which is the debt to income schedule for Fannie Mae. And we are at 2008 levels. And what happened is you would have an investor sell to another investor and change the comps in a neighborhood. So like I might sell my crappy farm to you for $2 million, but it's really worth like $200,000. And then that person turns around and can get a cash out refi on it, and then you're just trading houses back and forth. So we're going to have what I call, these are called title issues, like where, and the other thing that people don't understand is like during COVID, there were recording delays at the counties. Every time you do a mortgage, you have to record it at the county record. Well, guess what happens if, like in LA, for instance, you had a year long recording delay? Well, if you're smart enough and you get the timing right, you could go get 5 or 6 loans. And everybody was willing to give it out. You know, private credit, everybody's credit scores look great. And this is, you're hearing this from private credit right now. They are freaking out because they relied on the credit scores.
Melody Wright, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining me.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yes, crazy things going on right now. Everything that we've talked about in the last 2 months, not everything, but the things are just gaining momentum and hitting right now. But before we go that, please give me your Substack and we'll do it again at the end.
Sure. It's M3 Melody Substack.
Excellent. To all my viewers and listeners, I am a very happy and proud supporter of the Substack, and there's a lot of great information in there. Please do check it out. We'll put all of the put a link in the show notes so you can go visit and keep up to date on this housing market. So, Melody, let's get right to it.
Sure.
I mean, just since we've talked, I'm reading that housing foreclosures hit, I want to get this right, they jumped to 20% in October. I don't know. That's a huge number to me, just looking at it, but work that out for me. What is going on?
So yeah, it's 20% year-over-year increase. And what everybody has to understand is we're coming from historic lows, right? Like we had massive government intervention in the housing market during COVID, where you could do 18 months of forbearance, all kinds of things, all kinds of programs that people could turn to if they got into trouble. And so we are at like the lowest foreclosure rate we'd ever seen. But that is now starting to tick up. It's starting, essentially the low was hit somewhere around like 2021, but now we're starting that incline again. And that is just going to increase because with the guardrails that were put on the FHA program, which is FHA is about 13% of the market, that started in the beginning of October. It takes a lot of time due to all the regulations, but from here we should see, and I'm not happy about this, but I'm just letting people know, we should see foreclosures increase steadily. And by Q2 of 2026, we are going to have a lot of foreclosures out there.
Yeah, and to all my viewers and listeners, Melody, the last time I had you on, you said this was hitting right now. That was about a month ago, and I want to say you said in November, and boy did it start to hit. I also read that 900,000 people are underwater on their homeowners are underwater in their mortgages. Work that out for me, and you see that accelerating,
right?
As well.
Yeah, and we have to understand that the ICE is who published that number, Black Knight, and they don't have all the mortgages on their platform. And so let's keep that into consideration as well. But yeah, that I mean, it's happening because of all these workouts. So some crazy stuff happened after COVID. One of the ways that, for instance, if you were a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac borrower, you could take all of those forborne payments and put them at the back of the loan in the non-interest bearing lien to be paid off when you sold the home or you pay it off. But those liens weren't recorded. And so everybody's been running around talking about how much equity people have in their home, and it's just false. Like I reached out to CoreLogic and I said, how are you guys doing your mortgage equity withdrawal schedule? That's because that's what everybody uses to see how much home equity there is out there. I said, if you know the payment deferrals are not recorded because they use public record to get that information. They never responded to me. The Fed uses Experian, and I have noticed with the Experian data, it's incomplete. There's a lot of servicers out there that aren't even reporting to credit. You don't have to report to all of them. And VantageScore, for instance, has very different delinquency information. So my point being that people shouldn't we people are going to be surprised by this. I'm not surprised by this, but you had all of that. You have all of these things have been happening, as well as like this private credit getting into lending out money for various things like renovating your home that's not really recorded as a lien against that. I mean, it's all kinds of private loans that are going on out there. So yes, people are underwater. And what else is increasing right now? Home equity loans, right? HELOCs, lines of credit, because and as well as refinances, which why would you be doing a refi out of a 2 to 3% rate? Well, because you're in trouble. You want to pay down higher interest rate debt. And so yes, we are at the point of the cycle now where we have underwater borrowers. And now you just take the Wall Street Journal article yesterday with my pal John Kaminsky. Was quoted for the work he's done on digging in into that Ginnie Mae MBS, and you can and the strats, and you can see like 27% of some of these builder originated loans are underwater already. Like, and these are
Oh my
very
gosh.
recent originations, like Lennar, for instance. And that's something. So when I went out to Dallas, I went to the neighborhoods he'd identified where there were all these FHA underwater borrowers, because essentially they buy down that rate, but they're still selling them. And there's a big article in the American Enterprise Institute today or yesterday talking about the fact that when you buy down that rate, you know, it seems like a good deal, but in reality, it's keeping that price. So the builders spent about 3% to get. Because it's a forward commitments, it's very confusing. We don't need to go there, but to essentially to the way that they would have affected that would have been a 10% price reduction, but instead they bought down the rate, and so people are turning around, and a lot of these people in new home they have a lot of regret and they're trying to sell, and they're already those home prices have already come down. Because just think about the poor people that bought in a neighborhood in say 22, 23, and then but what the builders have been doing is all these promotions as well as slashing prices. So yeah, you've got a situation where the consumer is not nearly as healthy as is being described out there in mortgage land. And once that awareness happens, it is the biggest debt load in our country. We're going to have some serious trouble.
Yeah, so about that, if you would, this is hitting right now. Work that out. We're having serious trouble now. What does 26 really look like, if you would?
It does not look good. I mean, at all. And you know, these layoffs are just accelerating. You know, I just heard Verizon was 20,000 instead of 15,000. I mean, this is just getting crazy in terms of your white collar. It's a wrecking ball, right? And so, and they are the prime loan borrowers. But here's the thing: I just told you about those payment deferrals, so they're not in this equity position everybody thinks. But also, their credit scores were inflated because you know student loans weren't reporting. You could get an eviction. You know, you had that mortgage forbearance, and so those borrowers are not as healthy as everybody thinks. And so, I shared something on X Twitter. This week, which is the debt to income schedule for Fannie Mae, and we are at 2008 levels. And so it's just people are going to be very surprised. But that prime, my point about all that is that prime consumer is softer than people think. And so it's probably going to accelerate very quickly. We'll go from, very low percentage delinquency on those books to a fairly high one, because on FHA right now, we're over 11% delinquent.
Good gosh. So, there you're also going to have a lot of inventory, correct me if I'm wrong, with home builders hitting the market now because they're not having any buyers, if you would, at the current
Right.
prices, correct?
That's right. And that's right. And that's not the only inventory that's coming. We're seeing motivation turn to distress, where people are either getting that foreclosure notice, so they have to turn, they've been listing their home with no bites, so they turn around and they have to cut prices. So you're going to get increases to inventory because of the distress. These short-term rentals, we have this tourism that's not doing that great. Well, those Airbnb bros are going to be having to sell those second, the short-term rentals. And then you've also got your long-term rental. We just saw rents dropped in October. I can't remember. It was like the most since blah, 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 but it was a lot. And so you've got so much investment in this housing market. So you have so many people that do long-term rental, and it's not just the institutionals, it's a lot of mom and pops. Well, I've been seeing it around here. I know what's going on around the corner. The going on around the country is, as property taxes and insurance increase, they are offloading those long-term rentals. And so those are going to hit the market too, as well as all this new home inventory, as well as all this multifamily, because they built like bananas, as well as built for rent. Like, everybody got in on this game, except for your forgotten American. So.
Yeah. Talk to me. Talk about they're floating the idea of a 50-year mortgage here. Is that going to make any impact here, or do you even think that's going to happen?
So I think the blowback was so fierce that it probably won't happen, but it's a terrible idea. We already have 40-year modifications, which is why Trump got confused in that interview. So what'll happen, I'm watching people, they can't even qualify for a modification, because with the increases in their property tax and insurance, that payment's still higher than when it was originated. And so this 40-year extending the loan does nothing. And I just want everyone, so no one in our country knows what an amortization schedule is. They've never looked at it. If we taught this to people in high school, I guarantee you we'd have a very different country. But by year 11 of a 50-year mod, if you just assume a $400,000 price, you would pay over $250,000 in interest.
Good gosh.
And that's
By
what a
year
home.
11.
By year 11, and you know what? How much you would have paid down your balance? 5%. 5%. So most people
Gosh.
stay in their home for 7 years. I mean, that's it. Are in their loan. That's the average. But think about if you're trying to sell. I mean, home prices, there's no way they would accelerate that much to make that worth whatever. And people are like, well, you could take the $300, $400, play in the Bitcoin or whatever. It's like, okay. Good luck with that, people. Like, it's that's sorry, we've been in a crazy time, and you're not gonna see those kinds of returns, like many Bitcoiners woke up today. So, that's it's a terrible idea. It's usury, in my opinion. It's absolute usury. It's not good for anybody, and it would not, by the way, it would make a huge impact, because guess what? The people that could that the people are failing at that payment rate right now. They can't, the young Americans can't even afford that payment. So, especially with property tax and insurance.
Yeah. Okay. So, talk a little bit about the repo market, because I just read, this was just last week, the Fed is injecting liquidity. I want to say, please fact check me to all my viewers and listeners. I want to say it was $30 billion, if I'm not mistaken. Well, first of all, talk about the repo market first. What exactly is that for people that don't understand and don't know?
Yeah.
Talk, and why is it important?
So so the whole hyper financialized game is about collateral. And what do I mean by collateral? It's like, I need to be able to pledge some assets to get some money to go do my gambling. If you think about like what happened, it wasn't a subprime crisis, the GFC. What happened is you got people in over their skis on certain derivatives and bonds. And it was a confidence game. And Chase turned around to Lehman and said, "No more. Like, what? We're not. We don't believe you anymore." And boom, like it, you know, because all of a sudden you had liquidity shortage across the system. And so what people do, what it's all. I mean, it's hard to explain to people that don't, you know, look at spreadsheets all day. But it's like it's not about making money to make things any. It's all about, can I get one basis point over here if I take my assets and if I pledge my mortgage-backed security, you can give me three times that so I can go gamble over here. And so what you're having is you're having liquidity shortages in the system, and so they are trying to take whatever safe and liquid asset they have, like a mortgage-backed security, like a short-term treasury, and pledge it in repo so that they can get more money to go out and cover their other bets. And so it's less, I guess, the idea that the Fed's injecting, it's more like this is the function of the repo market, and you can sense, I mean, the trouble is out there. And you can, I mean, of course it is with all of these highly levered bets that we're seeing, right? Three times ETF, I mean, all of this crazy stuff, and we don't even know the half of it, right? I mean, we don't. I mean, the shadow markets are, some say, 2 to 3 times bigger than they were during the GFC.
And GFC was the great financial crisis in 2008. Just to all my viewers and listeners, that's what you're referring to, correct,
Yes.
Melody?
Yes.
Okay, so
Melody,
go
can I
ahead.
ask a question on the 2008? You're comparing similar numbers today with 2008, and it sounded like the subprime borrowers were kind of, they slipped through the cracks somehow. I know that in 2008 we put ourselves, supposedly we try to put our guardrails up to so that this doesn't happen again, but we can't help ourselves. What were the guardrails, and how did people slip through the cracks? It's so upsetting. And it's so, you know, because I came from the industry and I was one of those people that went out, I managed the crisis. And then I went out to other companies to try to get them in good shape so this would never happen again. And we all fully believe that in the industry. But unfortunately, behind the scenes, the government had different ideas. And so they expanded the FHA program. That is double what it was during the GFC. And that is your new subprime. That's your government-backed subprime. You can have a credit score as low as 580, with compensating factors on FHA, 3.5% down. But guess what? You don't even need to come up with 3.5% down because every city across this country has some sort of down payment assistance program that you can apply for. And so it's a no skin in the game. Then, by the way, you kind of had some coaching going on, that if you got one of these FHA loans, you didn't have to pay because of this advanced loan modification partial claim. Where you don't pay for 3 months, you would go and you get a partial claim. They'd put it at the back of your loan. Couldn't pay for 3 more months, you go back again. Couldn't pay for 3 more months. And so, through John Kaminsky's work, we see that these people, if you've had one of these partial claims, you're 5 to 7 times more likely to have another one. So, my point is, it's so the government sponsored enterprises, Fannie and Freddie, have these automated underwriting systems and they think they're golden. And what this always happens in every cycle, Steve, you know, the originators think they're doing everything right because they got a pass from that automated underwriting system that is backed by the GSEs. So the GSEs are going to buy them. The problem is, we always see the problems in servicing, which is what I specialize in. And I am seeing things I didn't even see back then. So it's as if we got some lessons in 2008, not about how to be more prudent, but how to game the system even more. And so in reality, the government is fueling this subprime crisis. This is government-backed subprime.
Wow. Melody, what you just said, you were seeing things now like you didn't see then. I paraphrase. What exactly are you seeing in?
Oh boy. Just, I mean, all kinds of stuff where they didn't catch that the borrower was on another mortgage, like some crazy valuation things where, you know, oh gosh, so much complicated, but like where they just basically lied, went out and got one mortgage, then went out to the private market and got more mortgages. And so what's happening is our investors are waking up and realizing they're not in first lien position, meaning somebody else has is in in front of you to be able to take that collateral back. And then also, I don't know if you guys know this, but margin loans, a lot of times they use your house as collateral. So that is another thing we've got going on for us. So yeah, I mean, I could go on and on, but let's say one of the biggest issues are the valuations, and what happened is you would have an investor sell to another investor and change the comps in a neighborhood. So like I might sell my crappy farm to you for $2 million, but it's really worth like $200,000. And then that person turns around and can get a cash out refi on it, on a, you know, and then you're just trading houses back and forth. So we're gonna have what I call, these are called title issues, like where, and the other thing that people don't understand is like during COVID, there were recording delays at the counties. Every time you do a mortgage, you have to record it at the county record. Well, guess what happens if, like in LA, for instance, you had a year-long recording delay? Well, if you're smart enough, and you get the timing right, you could go get five or six loans, and everybody was willing to give it out. You know, private credit, everybody's credit scores look great. And this is, you're hearing this from private credit right now. They are freaking out because they relied on the credit scores. And like, I mean, they're just getting blown up left, right, and center because they shouldn't have been lending money anyway. Underwriting is very complicated. And what, nobody wants to hear this, but we cannot Henry Ford credit. We can't. And I know in this AI crazed, you know, world, we think that we can do that. We can't. We really can't. And that's what's happened is, and every time you try to do that, you have a mess just like this.
Yeah. Do you expect, and really sooner than later, a lot of banks to start blowing up, if you would? And we've had a consolidation in the banking sector really since the great financial crisis of 08. But yeah, it seems like we have less banks, but they're bigger, if you would, the more regional and or the big players. But do you, yeah, what do you do with all of that? I mean, do you expect
Yeah.
them? Yeah, work that out for me.
Yeah. I mean, our biggest lenders they're not even lenders, people. They're agents of the GSEs, because what they do is they put the money out for that property, but then they turn around in 30 seconds, and in fact, they've already committed it, sell it to the GSEs. So these are non-banks that have the majority of this exposure, and they are going to be, and they're already in a world of hurt. You can look, they're doing debt offerings, things that I know because I was one of these non-banks or worked at a non-bank. And so I know what's happening. Like they can't get borrowings at the rates they need them because it's a very thin margin game, and it's a game. So yes, they're absolutely going to come under stress. The regionals are going to come under stress as well. But unfortunately, what we're probably going to see is more consolidation, like you're saying, because the big banks are going to be sitting there salivating. And they'll agree, you know, they'll kindly agree to take all of these assets at pennies on the dollar. And I honestly think that's what you're going to see. And in some ways, you know, I'm not a fan of big banks. I think, like you say, I mean, we need these regionals. We need to support our local community banks, but it should be banks that are lending. They have the deposits. You can't just lend using borrowings. That makes no sense. And so that is a game. So anyway, yes, I think we're going to see more consolidation. Unfortunately, what I would love to see is if, you know, the FHLB supports those smaller banks. And I feel like if they had to truly take the risk onto their balance sheets, they would be prudent. They would, but they don't now. And they don't understand. What the GSEs will do is they'll turn around and make you repurchase that loan if something goes wrong with it. And they say they don't target delinquent loans, but they do. They absolutely do. So that's how they'll get their money back. And what's that going to do? It's going to bankrupt those regional banks. So I wish we would just let them take on this to their balance sheet. Then they truly are responsible for the risk at that point.
Melody, speaking about being responsible for the risk, are a lot of these banks and lenders just, you know, one, I mean, it's hard to, you know, sit back and not make money when, you know, the
Right.
opportunity is
When
there, when again it's
the
good. But like, are they just counting on another bailout sort of thing? I mean, what's, I mean,
getting's
something's. Something's got to give. I mean, like, we need guardrails or something. It's like, it's the same issue over and over. Sorry.
No, I think it's humanity, right? It's hubris. And a lot of the people that are big now weren't big back then. Like, they don't. This is what I found every time. So I was at a top five originator and servicer. We went through hell. We went through the, you know, attorney general settlement, a consent order, like, you know, mortgage was a bad word. It was terrible, right? Yeah. Then I would go out to other companies to try to teach them how to get their shop in order and what they would need to do.
Yeah.
And every one of them, they just couldn't go all the way there. It costs too much money. And it was one of the reasons that my company actually went into bankruptcy is that we wanted to do everything correctly and we couldn't survive that way. So, yeah, I think, like you say, when the money's there, like I remember rolling up to a small non-bank originator in 2019 and out front there was a Lamborghini, you know, a Porsche. And I was just like, what is happening? Like, what is happening? But the money's just too good when the getting's good.
Yeah. So, Melody, this is my expectation. I'm not advocating for this, but this is my expectation. I want your thoughts on this. I think, again, my opinion is based on really 2008. Things are getting bad. They're going to get worse. And then the Fed, whoever, is just going to flood this with liquidity. What happens then? I mean, is it just a bounce up then? Like, because we went pretty much straight up from 2008.
I don't think, I mean, you got to look at, I mean, prices didn't bottom till 2012. And,
right.
And the only reason that they stopped declining was because Wall Street came in and bought up all of the foreclosed homes at the invitation, by the way, of the GSEs and FHA. And so that is what stopped it last time. But this housing market is not about John and Jane. This housing market is about speculators. And so they can, just like they bought MBS in 2009, we got a little refi boomlet in 2010, but it didn't stop the pain. Like, you know, foreclosures really, they peaked in 2010, but they were still very high all the way up until 2014, you know, and again, Wall Street is who bailed them out. So, and they can't now. They are now net selling. Except for the stupidest of them. And what they did for a year was just sell to each other and sell to like the builder sold to them. They sold to them. I mean, it was just it's crazy stuff. But they're now the smartest guys. And I just met was in a room with one of them. Are as soon as those leases on the long-term rentals are up, they're rehabbing them, they're getting them out as quickly as possible because they're oversaturated markets with institutionals like Atlanta, Tampa, and San Antonio. So I don't, Andy, they are going to try, but it is not going to change what's going to happen. And there is, so here's what I think is going to actually happen. The government is going to become the buyer of last resort and they are going to buy back. I mean, you can hear the institutionals crying on TV already. You know, it was Fannie Mae that brought us in to buy these homes. And now they're crying because they can't afford it. They're not making any money. So the government might come in and buy the homes and they might do programs. And there's some programs passed in the BBB that would be around, you know, like a percentage of adjusted income. If you're at a certain level, then you would get like money for down payment or favorable options. And so I think what we're going to see is a lot of affordable housing programs. Unfortunately, what we've seen with many of those is that it's usually the people running the program that get rich and it doesn't really help anybody. But they're going to be, I believe, just because of our supply due to demographics and how, you know, that's just going to accelerate from here, that no matter what they do, homes are going to start tracking with household median income again. It could take a very long time to get there. But that I think that is the outcome, especially with our demographics.
Got it. Talk a little bit about, we've talked about it last time, about our demographics. We talk about a population actually shrinking. It doesn't look good, but work that out a little bit for our viewers and listeners.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not happy about this. It's just the reality, but you know, 15.6 million boomers will leave us between now and 2035, and they own the majority of the homes. Another 26 million, but between the 2035 and 2050, at the same time, we're not having, we're not birthing babies at replacement rate. And so, you know, we already, I think we probably talked about the average household size in the US. You know, when I was growing up, it was, we heard about 3.5, you know, earlier than that, 4.2, now it's 2.5. So, you know, the whole housing shortage narrative is kind of crazy when you really dig into the details. But yeah, our demographics are terrible. And the only reason we had positive population gain last year was non, you know, they were foreign born. And so we're not going to have that next year. And yeah, we might not have it for the next couple of years. You know, and so you're really looking at a situation where the supply, because the boomers, a lot of them, they don't just own one home. They own two or three. Yep. And so, yeah, and their kids can't afford them. They can't afford these property tax. And if they, I mean, I'm helping kids right now try to offload properties, as well as ones that got into trouble. Somebody, you know, took a POA, took a loan out on mom's property without the other siblings knowing, things like this. I mean, it's terrible, but they can't afford them. And so this is all coming to market, and it just takes time, and people, we have like gnat like focus now. People just, you know, it's, they can't think through any of this. They just, you know, home prices go up.
Yeah. So what are really the expectations that, I guess, what are your expectations? Take me through the first quarter, if you would, of 26, if you can. Sure. And again, that's very hard to, not that you're predicting, but it's very hard to forecast, if you would. I do understand that. But what are your expectations here?
Yeah. So it's unfortunate we missed a month of new home sales. Not that they're very reliable statistics, but, and now I realize they're modeled, but the model tells me something about what's going underneath. But I think we're probably about to see accelerating home price declines at the end of this year. If this stock market route continues and we don't see the Santa rally we're all used to, right? I mean, sentiment's going to fall through the floor. And the boomers, these are the people, and I'm not trying to buy into that boomer versus the younger. I think that narrative is about dividing people. But I think you're going to start to see accelerated inventory non-seasonally. It's not going to make sense in a lot of these places because housing has seasons. You're seeing that out west right now. It's really wild. But I think we're going to see, you'll see your first uptick in foreclosures at the end. I mean, they're going to steadily go up from here. Don't get me wrong. That's a thing. But you're going to see kind of a critical increase probably by the end of Q1. And then by Q2, that's just going to be even worse. And as we're in that selling season, because this is what people don't understand, you only need one foreclosure in your neighborhood. And guys, it's the person you least expect are the first ones to default. It's the person with the flashy car and the boat and the RV and all of that. And so you think your neighborhood is immune. It is not. I guarantee you, you give me a zip code, I'm going to tell you who's underwater, who has property tax issues, occupancy, I mean, owner liens, all this kind of trouble. It just hides underneath the surface behind these flashy cars. And so one foreclosure in your neighborhood brings down everybody's comparables. And so we are so silly in this country about talking about median home price. Like how can we actually know the price? What's happening right now is we're not selling homes. You know, we had the lowest home sales since 1995 last year, and they're lower right now. I think we're going to catch up at the end of the year a little bit. But come on. Like, how can you actually know what, you know, a home is really worth? It's not what your Zestimate says. And by the way, most people didn't, it was too costly. At first they couldn't find the labor, but then it was too costly to do the repairs. And so they are thinking that their home is worth way more than it really is. And I think as they see homes start to sell for those lower prices, people are going to start to panic, and this will start to really accelerate through the selling season next year. But by the end of Q2 2026, I mean, we are going to be talking about a housing crisis.
Got it. Steve, we're going to have to leave soon, but did you have any questions for Melody here?
So I do want to ask you, well, I have several, but the Zestimate, you said, is not a good indicator of ha home valuation. And you seem to indicate that we have title, we're going to have title issues, and there's things where people were selling the house for like complete, there's a huge
Fictional.
variation. So what first is, what is the correct way? Or how can people know what their home is worth? Because I'm filling out paperwork and it's asking, how much is your house worth? You know, the first thing people go to is Zestimate. So where do you go to, and what should people be thinking?
Yeah, that's a really good question that nobody ever really asked. Yes, you can look. If you are serious, like if like you're like thinking, do I need to sell this house or do I need to take out a loan or whatever? Like you should get a real appraisal, not one that is recommended by your loan officer or not. Just go find your own independent appraiser and get a real, because what's happening right now is you're actually getting more honest appraisals. You didn't during the boom. Fannie Freddie said 55% of them were inflated. So, but get an appraisal. But and then also you need to look at your median income in your area. I mean, that is you, and look at the owner occupancy in your area, because you but people don't realize in these places like Nashville, there's a low owner occupancy and it's a lot of investors. So that's going to tell you. So honest to God, you kind of have to look deep under. Like in your neighborhood, okay, what was it last sold at? And like look at your price per square foot. That's a good way to look at it as well. Like and Zillow, others like that will give you some of this information. My pal Travis from Real Estate Mindset, he has really good courses on teaching you how to really think about the value of your home. So I would recommend what like his home buying course, for instance. It's free.
What's his
It's totally
website?
free.
What's
It's
his website?
realestatemindset.org, I think. But
We'll
that's
put that in the
his,
show notes.
yeah, that's his show as well. And it's all free. He's not trying to charge. It's just like this is how you should, because he used to be a loan officer and he lost everything in the last crash. But it's hard, but you have to think about factors, not just oh, I'm in a great zip code for or a great school zone, or I'm in this. You really need to look at the macro micro factors, like what is unemployment looking like? What is the household median income in your larger area? And what's the owner occupancy? And I recommend there's a program, they don't sponsor me. It's called Property Radar. It's a subscription, but you can go in and you can see all the tax liens in your neighborhood. You can actually get much better information on what is actually going on in your neighborhood. But it's at this point, honestly, it's really about I think people should start to think about my home. If household median income is X, then my home is Y. And that is going to be a hard pill for many, many people to swallow.
Got it. Melody, two things. I do have to go. I want to thank you. I want to thank you because you're very busy as well, and we squeezed this in. I want to really thank you for your time. If people want to read what you have to offer, if they want more of you, where do they go? Give us your Substack URL.
Yeah, so M3 Melody Substack, and I try very hard to lay out the thesis and give you tools in the free version and as well. So, I would encourage people to sign up for it even if they feel like they can't afford it, because you will learn how to do these things yourself to really figure out. And because I know, Steve, that was not an easy answer. It's so many different things that you have to, and but I try to teach people how to do that, and also think about how much new building is around you as well, like the institutional ownership. Sorry, there's just so many things, but
Yeah.
it's not your Zestimate, because they don't they those I mean th that logic is very flawed.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Melody. We'd love to have you on again as soon as you're
Sure.
available again. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been my pleasure.
You bet.